Thank you, Marion. I'm just going to see if I pull the wire out or anything, but I'm coming into the sunshine. I'm just sort of standing. I sometimes find when I'm standing here and it's looking like that, I'm over there. So I'm just going to go there and see what happens. Okay, when in my previous church, the evening service was very small and people used to sit at the back. And I kept asking them to move forward. And of course, being a church, they didn't. So I then said, if you're not going to move forward, I'm going to come to you. So you've got another week to think about it. And what did they do? They didn't move forward. So the following Sunday evening, we had a remote mic rather than a one that's wired in. I picked up the lectern and I walked halfway down the church and I put it there. By the time I left, they were sitting at the front. Because, say, the morning congregation was a lot, the evening congregation was a lot smaller. But we've just had read to us this letter to the church in Laodicea. The last of the seven churches in Revelation to receive a letter from Jesus. And over the last few weeks, we've been looking at the seven letters. And we've commented that each of them has a different introduction. And there's been something to commend and something to reproach, except in the cases of Philadelphia and Smyrna, where there was nothing to reproach. But sadly, it doesn't seem the best has been saved till last, because Laodicea is the only one that doesn't get any commendation. So we're going to reflect on that, and as we've said over the weeks, that these are letters from Jesus, not from John. John was the vehicle, John was the messenger, and these are letters directly from Jesus. And when Jesus speaks, we need to listen and to take note. And some people, some scholars have likened Laodicea to the church in the West today. So I'll leave you to make your own mind up as we look at this church in Laodicea and what Jesus said to it. And before I go any further, oh, there it is. That's it. So Laodicea is known as the lukewarm church, as was there in the middle of the reading that we had. Jesus says that they are lukewarm. And it's the most southerly of the seven churches. There's a bit more on there because obviously the Patmos is there. And you can see Laodicea. And it's about 40 miles southeast of Philadelphia. But also either side in the yellow dots, if you can see that with the sun shining on the screen. It's a rare occurrence since we've been in Biddeford, but it is happening today. So you can see the yellow dots of Hierapolis and Colossae. And just remember those because we'll be mentioning them a bit later. So what does the... There's a few pictures here of the ruins of the church of Laodicea. And you can see the plain, the vast plain, because that's where the sheep that they were famous for used to graze and grow, and then they would use their fleeces. And then that's one of the temples that was in Laodicea. And it says there that it's not been excavated fully. But then we get to the background of Laodicea. Named after somebody's wife. So there you go. That's where the name came from. And it means justice of the people. And if you can read that, it says it was known for the banking, the linen and wool industry, as well as its pharmaceutical skills. And it was a very well-to-do population. They were very wealthy. And it was Tacitus wrote that after an earthquake, they didn't even ask Rome for help because they had enough finances to rebuild the city themselves. So that's just an indication of how wealthy they were. And Paul evidently wrote them a letter in Colossians 4:12, We said that Colossae was just 10 miles down the road, and Paul wrote a letter, and in 4:16, Colossians 4:16, it basically tells the people of Colossae to send the letter to Laodicea, but it also says that they get the letter that he wrote to Laodicea, so they can see both of the letters. And now it's a desert called by the Turks the Old Castle. And it was famous for the worship of Zeus, whose likeness was found on the city coins. So what do these words say that Marian read to us? And we start in verse 14, to the angel of the church in Laodicea, write, these are the words of the Amen, the faithful and true witness, the ruler of God's creation. Jesus is affirming to them that he is the beginning and the end, that he is the faithful one, that he is true. I understand that the Greek can mean the first in point of time and rank. And that's who is writing to them. Some try to infer that from these words that Jesus was created by God, from the way that the introduction is translated in some versions of the Bible. But this is not the case, as John states quite clearly in the first chapter of John's Gospel. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. No doubt it is coming from Jesus, who knows all things. And so the people of Laodicea are encouraged, like with the other churches, to listen. And as we've been looking at the other churches, Jesus tends to use illustrations from their situations, making it personal to them. So he starts by referring to the water supplies in Laodicea. And I said early to remember the places of Colossae and Hierapolis. And if you remember those, the towns were about 10 and 13 miles away from Laodicea. So roughly, I know it's not accurate, one of them was about as far as Barnstable and one was a bit further. And from these two towns, there were pipes coming to Laodicea. One from Hierapolis that had these are some of the water pipes that remain. One from Hierapolis, where Hierapolis had a hot water spring with plenty of medicinal benefits, and it was transported down to Laodicea. And the other from Colossae was where cold water was. And so that was transported up to Laodicea through these pipes. So if you think about how long ago we're talking about, and the pipe work that they put in, and then this is just, again, a bit of a view of one of the pipes. But if you can read that, it says Laodicea's water channels through the dual pipeline, but it carried thick calcium impurities. Combined with its lukewarm temperature, it would make a visitor vomit. So that's what they were getting their water from. And basically, people prefer their water hot or cold. If you get it lukewarm, most people don't like that. And they say this was the problem with the water supplies that they had in Laodicea. It started hot in Hierapolis, it started cold in Colossae, but it arrived in Laodicea lukewarm. And it had got this reaction from visitors. If you went on holiday there, you'd be upset as you drank it. And sadly, this is what Jesus says to the people there. In the NIV, it says, I'll spit you out of my mouth if you're lukewarm. And the New King James, which Marian read for us, it talks about spewing out from the mouth. And spit is quite a gentle translation because it does mean to vomit. It's that reaction in the stomach where you just can't control and it's just, you're just spewed out. And the sense of anyone being lukewarm in their relationship with God is, from this, abhorrent to him. And it causes that reaction. if we're lukewarm, that he will just spew us out of his mouth. And often people think that hot is good and cold is bad in this relationship. And we can draw that analogy, but there are also commentators that say there are good things about hot water and there are good things about cold water. It's the lukewarmness that is offensive to God when we relate it to the water and situation. They're used for different purposes. Of course, when water's very cold, it becomes ice and you can put it in your drinks. On the hot summer's days that I'm told do arrive here in Biddeford. So I look forward to that. But something that I read through or have been reading through this year, back in January, the person writing from Romans 12, they said, never flag in zeal, be aglow with the Spirit, serve the Lord. And it said, only a burning zeal can impart ardour and set others aflame. So do not tolerate any lukewarmness in your spiritual life. The Lord will spew the lukewarm out of his mouth. They cause more harm to the establishment of the kingdom of God. So pray earnestly for the spirit of divine ardour who is promised to those who ask for him. Claim this promise in faith and he will come into your heart and equip you to serve God mightily. So that was one of the problems in Laodicea, that they were lukewarm. A relation to the water that they used to have and deal with. But also Laodicea was a wealthy and prosperous place, as we said. And that had led to complacency, not only in the secular life within the town, within the city, but also within the life of the church. And how often does the church reflect the city or town it's in, rather than causing the town to reflect the church? And that's one of the challenges to us today, to make sure that the town reflects the church and not the other way round. They had become self-reliant. They were okay with a relationship with God. They were happy to pay him lip service. But they didn't realize that their relationship was in reality far from God, far from where it should be. They were in a dire position, as it says in verse 17. You say, I'm rich, I've acquired wealth and do not need a thing. But you do not realize that you are wretched, pitiful, poor, blind, and naked. The people... I forgot to show you that one, but it just reminds you a picture of somebody ejecting from their mouth. I just thought you might like to see that. But the people, as I say, they were wealthy there. And they had this money. They thought they were rich. They knew they were rich in human terms, in what they had. But as far as Jesus was concerned, they were wretched, pitiful, poor, blind, and naked. So he then goes on, as I say, to use illustrations from their situation. And he talks about coming to him and being refined in the fire. We sang earlier, refiner's fire, my heart's one desire is to be holy, set apart for you, Lord. And it goes on to say, I choose to be holy. And we have choices to make about our walk with God. Another song says, Jesus, you are changing me. By your Spirit, you're making me more like you. Jesus, you're transforming me. Your loveliness may be seen in all I do. You are the potter, I am the clay. Help me to be willing to let you have your way. Jesus, you are changing me as I let you reign supreme within my heart. And that is the secret. We have to let him reign supreme in our hearts. There is no room for self. Let him by his Spirit change us. And as he does that, then we will become spiritually rich, which is far more important than any worldly wealth. So they were rich, and Jesus drew on that analogy. But they were also proud of their wool industry. I mentioned the sheep earlier, but they were black sheep, and they had a black wool. They produced a unique black wool from these black sheep. And they were well known for it, and they were proud of it. But what does Jesus say? He says, "Come to me, be refined in the fire, so that you can become rich, and white clothes to wear." He was actually talking about their industry, comparing it, as it were, and just saying, "Wear white clothes. I will give you white robes." And we know in other parts of the Bible it talks about the white robes, white being that sign of purity. And again we sang, "Purify my heart." Don't be proud of our earthly achievements, but receive from God. Receive what he wants to offer, the white clothes that he wants us to wear, to cover our shameful nakedness. And it's as we come to him and we seek his forgiveness that he comes and he forgives us and helps us to lead a life that is honouring and pleasing to him. And then he goes on to talk about the salve to put on your eyes. And again, they were known for their eye ointments in that town that had some positive effect. But again, Jesus says you can put that on and you can maybe see better physically. But what I'm talking about is to have your spiritual eyes cleansed so that you can see as I see. Have proper 20/20 vision to see with God's eyes. Another song says, "Open my eyes, Lord, I want to see Jesus." And it's as we reach out and as we see him, as we see things more clearly, as we see with his eyes, that we understand what he wants us to do and the people that he wants us to be. And why is Jesus concerned about the people in Laodicea in verse 19? "Those whom I love." He's concerned because he loves them. That's why he's writing this letter. He's not letting them, he doesn't want them to continue in the way they're going. But he wants them to receive this because he loves them. And as I said earlier and was commented there, that he's obviously sent message via Paul earlier on, as we're told in Colossians 4:16. Colossians were told to share their letter with the church in Laodicea, and Laodicea are told to share their letter with those in Colossae. In verse 16 it says, "After this letter has been read to you, see that it is also read in the church of the Laodiceans, and that you in turn read the letter from the Laodiceans." So there was interaction. God had been in touch with them, as it were, through Paul. And he'd been in touch here directly. John had sent the message because he loves them. "And those whom I love, I rebuke and discipline." If you love someone, if you love children, you don't want them just to carry on as they are. You want to make sure they do the right thing. Hebrews 12, it says there that have you forgotten that the word of encouragement that addresses you as sons, "My son, do not make light of the Lord's discipline. Do not lose heart when he rebukes you, because the Lord disciplines those he loves and punishes everyone he accepts as a son." Love can be misplaced. If you let people do what they like, it can be misplaced. It's got to have that discipline to teach and to train. I don't know whether I ought to confess this in a Baptist church, but I actually have a godson. No, that's what the Anglicans do. Some friends of mine, almost 30 years ago, contacted me when they had their third son, And in the words of the mother, she said, I know you don't do this sort of thing, but would you like to be, or would you be prepared to be his godfather, one of his godfathers? And as she talked, she said, really, all we want is somebody to pray for him as he grows. And we just want to do, we want you to do that. As this child grew, his mother on more than one occasion apologized for asking me to be godfather of such a naughty little boy. He visited us with his father one day when he was probably 5, 6, I suppose. He had a biscuit, he took a bite and it disappeared under the settee. And then he said, I want another biscuit. He was given another biscuit and the same thing happened. I want another biscuit. You're not having another biscuit because you've thrown two under the settee. He looked at me as 6-year-olds can only do and he said, you're my godfather. You're supposed to love me and do what I want. That's the sort of young lad he was. Tried to explain things to him gently. I'm pleased to say that as a 30-year-old and a teacher, he is a pleasant young man, but as yet hasn't committed his life to Christ. But I was speaking to his mother this week and she said, I sense a softening. I sense a softening. Keep praying. Keep praying. When we love people, we don't just let them do what they like. And God doesn't just let us do what we like. He wants us to walk with him. He wants us to come to him. But Jesus doesn't force anybody to do that. It's a choice that we have to make. And in verse 20, it says there, here I am, I stand at the door and knock. If anyone hears my voice and opens the door, I will come in and eat with him, and he with me. We need to open that door and to let him in, and he will come in and have relationship with us. This verse is often replied to individuals, and that's fine, but it also applies to the church, because this is a letter to the church. There's a story told of a man who arrived at a church. He wasn't dressed very well, and he was really told that he couldn't come in because he wasn't dressed properly. He wandered down the street, and he said there was somebody sitting on a bench, and he sat next to this person on the bench. And as they talked, he realized that this person was Jesus. And he said to him, I've just been to the church down the road. They wouldn't let me in. And Jesus said, I know, I have the same problem with that church. It's sad when these things happen. But people aren't let in for various reasons, for numbers of reasons. Some people that were in our congregation in Bilston, they grew up in Zimbabwe, they moved to South Africa, they went to a church at the end of the service. Because they were black and it was a white congregation, they were told, you'd be happier at the church down the road. What they really meant is, we don't want you here. There was a lady in the congregation, she was the first Jamaican lady to walk into that congregation back in the 60s. She told us in our time there that for a very long time there was only one person who spoke to her in that congregation. And when she was sharing this at her house group, there were other people from Jamaica who joined the church. And as only they can, one of the ladies said, "Well, why did you keep coming, sister? Why did you keep coming back?" And she said, "Well, I went to a Baptist church in Jamaica, so I thought I'd go to a Baptist church here." I said, "Well, if it was me, I wouldn't have come back." And we need to be welcoming. Thankfully, it is a much different place. And as I've said before, we had about 14 different nationalities within that congregation as people were welcomed and made at home. But what about Biddeford? As we've said before, that strapline, the house that welcomes, loves and accepts us exactly as we are. As we've said, it's easy to have a strapline, but we need to put it into practice. And we need to make sure it's a reality. And we'll only be able to do that if the door in the first place is open to Jesus. And that he is the centre. He is the one who is here. He is the one who governs everything that we do. And he says, "If anyone hears and opens the door, I will come in and eat with him and he with me. And then to him who overcomes, I will give the right to sit with me on my throne." I will give the right to sit with me on my throne. It's only Jesus that can do that. It's only Jesus that has the ability to do that, to give us the right. When I was at Bible college, somebody who lived in a, we lived in a farm cottage, and the people next door, he was a very keen fisherman, and the church that we attended, he was talking to somebody who was a bit of a landowner in the area, and they were talking about fishing. And the man who owned the land said, "Oh," said, "I've got..." Said, "I don't know whether you know, but part of the River Tweed runs through my land, and I've got the fishing rights to it because it goes through my land. And if you know anything about fishing, the River Tweed is one of the best places to catch salmon, I think, or whatever." And this man's eyes lit up, and he said, "If you ever want to go fishing, just go." And he said, "Well, what happens if people come along? If anyway, if my one of my men come along, just tell them, Mr. Redpath said I could sit here." It was only Mr. Redpath who could give permission for him to sit there. He thought he'd won the jackpot, as they say. But that's nothing compared to what Jesus says here. That if we overcome, I will give him the right to sit with me on my throne. People like to talk about places they've been, places they'd like to go, things that they see. But nothing compares to what Jesus offers to all who come to him. So the challenges that are presented within this letter to Laodicea for us today is, don't miss out by being lukewarm. Come to him who is the first and the last, the creator of all things, and longs for us to know him better. Let's have a time of quiet as we just reflect where our position is in relation to our Lord Jesus Christ. And before we sing our closing hymn, I'm just going to read a prayer of St. Francis Drake, that he wrote as he set off on one of his adventures. Disturb us, Lord, when we're too pleased with ourselves, when our dreams have come true because we dream too little, when we arrive safely because we sailed too close to the shore. Disturb us, Lord, when, with the abundance of things we possess, we have lost our thirst for the waters of life. Having fallen in love with life, we have ceased to dream of eternity. And in our efforts to build a new earth, we've allowed our vision of the new heaven to dim. Disturb us, Lord, to dare more boldly, to venture on wilder seas, where storms will show your mastery, where losing sight of land we shall find the stars. We ask you to push back the horizons of our hope and to push back the future in strength, courage, hope, and love. This we ask in the name of our captain, who is Jesus Christ. Amen. And we're going to sing a song that just